an extremely well-known, provocative, very intriguing medrash describes the iteration of the word Noach, of the name Noach, three times in the first pasuk. Ela toldos Noach, Noach yitz tzadik, tamim haya b'der osav, eser alokim hisalech Noach. A little bit odd that the name Noach should be mentioned three times. We have examples of twice, but three times. So the Medrash Tanchuma, very well-known Medrash, associates this three-time repetition of the word Noach to the fact that there really were three Noachs in history. The Noach we know of, and two people who lived lives which were in some way similar to Noach, Eov and Daniel. And what's the common denominator between the classic, well-known, official Noach and these two Noach-esque personalities, Eov and Daniel? But the language of the Medrash is Zechad Mishlosha Shero Gimel Olamos. They saw three different worlds, Noach, Daniel, and Eov. Noach, now again, it's not clear whether the three-time iteration in the Pasuk hints to the three people or to the three stages. But they all saw a world successful, built, developed, established. They all experienced the fall, the deterioration, the catastrophe. Noach lived through the Mabul, Eov lived through personal crisis, and then Daniel lived through the national tragedy of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, but they all saw the resurgence and the recovery and the restoration. So the language of the Medrash is, Noach ra olam b'yishuvo, v'ra b'chorbano, v'chazer v'ra'eo b'yishuvo. Daniel ra binyan b'yishrishon, Charev v'chazer v'ra'eo b'bano b'bayisheni. Eov ra binyan b'yiso v'chorbano v'chazer v'ra b'yishuvo. And then he had the restoration. And what's the difference between Noach's experience, Eov's experience, and Daniel's experience? Because evidently this medrash speaks to a very important trait in life. It's the trait of resilience, the trait of recovery, the trait of living in a world in which we don't all enjoy straight arcs. We build, we develop, we experience success and prosperity. And sometimes, despite all of our efforts, things crumble and things crash. And all of our towers and all of our achievements, sometimes all of our achievements are dismantled before our eyes. And for many, that leads to despair and frustration and surrender. And some have the capacity in life to demonstrate resilience and recovery and I would call it the hardiness of spirit to respond to frustration and sometimes tragedy and to rebuild. Obviously, we think a lot about Rabbi Akiva, who lost 24,000 students and didn't cave and didn't fall into a state of despair or despondency, but he then taught 5 Talmidim, and although it wasn't numerically as impressive as the 24, these 5 Talmidim changed the world. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Leza ben Shemur, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. So, at a certain level, of course, both Noach, Daniel, and Eov all demonstrate this similar, almost identical capacity for resilience and restorativeness and persistence, even in the face of adversity. But if you want to train ourselves towards that trait, it's important not just to notice the common trait or the commonality between their lives and their narratives, but the differences, because we'll find ourselves in different states. So the first difference, which is striking, is of course, and perhaps the most obvious one, is you're dealing with catastrophes at different levels. Eov is struggling with a personal catastrophe. He's wealthy, he's established, he has a family, he's impactful in society, he's recognized in his society. And all this comes crashing down. All this falls apart. So for Eov, it's the personal tragedy and the personal loss of a world, a personal world that he had built, that he had developed, that he had brick by brick laid throughout his life, and now it seems to be slowly falling and crumbling in front of his eyes. For Daniel, it's not the personal world that is eroding, but it's the national experience. He's living through the first Gullus, and he saw the glory of the first Beis HaMikdash, of Jewish monarchy, of Jewish sovereignty, of statehood. This is also something which is slow. It doesn't happen immediately. There's the first wave of Gullus, the second wave of Gullus, actually the three waves, the ten Shvatim, which perhaps he wasn't old enough to have lived through, but certainly those two initial waves, Daniel himself is personally relocated to Bavel. In that first wave of the Galus Yehoyachin, he's part of a clan of future Jewish leaders, of young, up-and-coming Jewish leaders, and Nebuchadnezzar plans to relocate to Bavel, sequestering them in the palace, training them in Babylonian culture so they can help these older Jews who are inevitably going to be exiled to Babylonia segue to Babylonian culture. So he's witnessing and living personally, not a personal catastrophe, but a national calamity. And of course, Noach is not responding to a national calamity or a personal disaster. He's facing the annihilation of an entire planet. And they're structurally similar, and sometimes we live through one, and of course, sometimes we also live through many at the same time, but we live different circles, different orbits in our lives. There's a humanistic orbit, and we think about the planet and the human race and the trends that are affecting humanity. We're part of humanity. Of course, we live as Jews. It's part of a national arc. And then, of course, we have our own private lives and our own private experiences. And sometimes we'll experience success in one, and we'll witness failure in another, and it's not all or nothing, and it's not monotonic, and there are different voices in our lives, and sometimes we have to realize that though we may be personally frustrated, we may realize that in a general sense, humanity is successful, and in a general sense, Jewish people are advancing their arc, and of course, the arc of a Jew is the arc of a universal arc of humanity, and sometimes that can help console us that even though our own lives have personally frustrating circumstances. Sometimes it's the reverse. We live through very difficult moments nationally. That doesn't, of course, that should cloud our experiences personally because we can't disassociate the two. We can't sever the two. But the ability to create at least different compartments in our mind and in our experience, although they're merged and they overlap, but they have to exist as different compartments. I think the second difference is how they respond to the collapse and what their primary tool in rebuilding is. For Noach, the tool is effort, and no one puts forth the same type of effort as Noach, 120 years building the Teva, a year in the Teva, feeding all the livestock and all the animals in this community, the struggle to leave the Teva, which ultimately costs Noach dearly, his dignity, his relationship with his family, his honor. At least one of his sons takes the fall for his inebriated behavior, but he's under a lot of pressure physically and, of course, mentally and emotionally, and that expresses itself in his drunkenness. But Noach is bearing this entire restoration project. This, those of you who are Americans will understand this reference, this Marshall Plan to rebuild Europe, it's all rebuild the world. It's all on his shoulders. For Eov, there's not that much effort that's involved. There's nothing he can do personally, no measure he can take, no remedy he can exercise to alleviate the illness and to restore his family and his wealth and his reputation. He just struggles with faith. And Eov is a book of faith, and Eov is a book of theodicy and how human beings respond to perceived divine injustice, to a world which seems awry, which isn't aligned, which righteous people suffer and wicked people sometimes prosper. Tzadik v'ra'lo, Rasha v'tovlo. And at some point, it's debatable how robust Eov's faith remains, but it's clear that towards the end his faith is intact and whatever blasphemy he experiences has receded or has passed, and there is a level of faith that warrants the restoration that's divinely delivered. So his tool is faith, and Daniel has many tools, but Daniel is known for, framing or updating the world of Tefillah. The world of Tefillah obviously dates back to the Avos, but you can imagine it took an ancillary role in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. Obviously, the Beis HaMikdash is referred to as Beis Tefillah, Yikarei L'chol HaMim by Yeshaya. Shlomo is aware that people will dive into the Beis HaMikdash, but presumably Tefillah is amplified in an environment or a setting in which Karbanos are no longer available. And Daniel davens, and for his davening, for his open davening facing Yerushalayim, he's ultimately incarcerated and tossed to the lions. So Daniel composes many of the psukim, which constitute our tachanon, both the shortened tachanon, but more importantly, the extended tachanon of Monday and Thursday. So Daniel reinvigorates tefillah, reframes, reestablishes tefillah. So you've got three different responses to tragedy, whether it's personal effort to overcome the tragedy, whether it's the faith to withstand the tragic conditions and to believe in a better tomorrow, or the tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I think when we want to try to rebuild ourselves and our worlds, whether it's our personal world, our national experience, or the mabul-like situations we find, we face in the world we inhabit, all three ingredients are necessary. It's the faith of Eov and the prayer of Daniel, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should assist us, and of course the effort of Noach. So it's not just different in terms of the scale of and the orbits in which these disasters occur, but in the type of response. I think a third difference is, and this is not one particular difference, but I think that there's signature differences in the process of Daniel, the process of Noach, and the process of Eov. First of all, I think Daniel, what makes Daniel so astounding is that he doesn't really live to see the full restoration. Chazal, of course, place him at the time of Megillas Esther, which is about 10 or 20 years before the final return to Yerushalayim. Chazal say that Hasach, or Charvona, is Daniel. I'm not sure who, but they try to fit Daniel into Megillas Esther. He lives through the Gullah 70 years earlier. So let's say, just to place him, it's hard to have the exact dating and timeline, but let's say, let's make him a young 15 or a young 12 during the Gullah of Jehoiachin. And now it's about 60, 70 years later, so he's got to be in his high 80s or early 90s, and then during Megillas Esther, and then another 10 or so years, again, hard to know, elapses until the return with Ezra and Nehemiah. So he's an older man. So he sees the dawning of this restoration. He realizes, perhaps he walks back to Eretz Yisrael, and he sees the second Beis HaMikdash, but he doesn't live through it, and sometimes in our lives, in our shortened lives, we're not able to live through the entire restorative arc and the entire reconstitution of a world we've lost, but we can still participate. Think about people who lived through the Holocaust and saw the first stirrings. People who had the privilege to live in the last 15, 20, 30 years saw the restoration of Torah. People, of course, who saw the restoration of the State of Israel, but some people certainly did not see the restoration of Torah. Torah took a while for Torah to be restored in the same vitality that it expresses today, and I think of Daniel, but they certainly saw the budding of yeshivas, the growing interest in Talmud Torah. I think in Eov's case, what makes it striking is that the restoration isn't complete. If you read the end of Sefer Eov, he of course is blessed with children, so that part of his fall, that part of his collapse is alleviated or restored. And of course, from a financial perspective, his assets are doubled. Hashem delivers Mishnah, double the amount of cattle, double the amount of sheep. But he still lost his former family. And there was still death, there was still tragedy. And he lived with the pain of their loss. And despite the renewal of family, you don't get past the loss and you still feel the hurt and the suffering. And sometimes there's complete restoration. A person gets ill and then is health is restored, and there's no long-term damage or long-term anguish from the health or from the medical crisis. Or sometimes our finances dip, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu restores our financial viability, and then we look back, and we really didn't suffer long-term inconvenience or long-term vulnerability. But Eov restores his wealth, and he has new family, and he has new mishnah, but think about all the people he lost. And what I think is striking about Noach is that I think in Noach's situation, the resilience is even more impressive because it's easy when you live through collapse to point fingers and accuse people. Eov, in his mind, is suffering for absolutely no reason. He's a righteous person. He's a tzaddik. He believes in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he struggles. And his friends visit and try to provide insight, guidelines, approaches, philosophies to handle this theodicical crisis. Theodicy is a word for the meaning of evil. How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow evil to exist in the world? And to a degree, Daniel also doesn't realize, it takes him a while, and ultimately he recognizes the fault of the Jewish people, but he struggles with it, and that's part of the struggle of being a believing Jew. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lamet Hiznach Lanesach, there's a bris avos, and that struggle fuels the resilience, because you believe that there's an undeserved fate, you believe there's something illogical, something unjust, and you struggle with it, and you struggle to rectify it. You struggle with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you ask him, you dive into him, you wonder, you petition HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but also you try to restore it. In Noach's situation, had every reason to point fingers and say these people were morally degenerate, these people were promiscuous, these people deserve the fate, they deserve to be annihilated. And now let's start, maybe I should just accept that fate because the world's a failure. And Noach doesn't just point fingers, but he exits the Teva, he exits the shelter, he wants to try to rebuild humanity. He doesn't lose faith in the human spirit. You could have easily lost faith in humanity. Humanity, as the last Pesukim in Bereishis described, Yetzer Levadam Raminu Rav, there's no reason that human beings should inhabit this earth. They're just poisonous and toxic and immoral. But it doesn't lose faith. And sometimes when there are disasters and tragedies, and we feel as if they're deserved, we accept them. And I think the heroism of Noach is that even though this tragedy and this situation is deserved, he doesn't accept it, but he rallies against it, and he tries to rectify it and to restore. So I think it's an intriguing medrash, and it teaches us a lot about our own struggles and our own resiliency, and it provides a common denominator and a common message, but three very different showcases, three very different exhibitions of this common message.